going to stop there and see if there's any questions or observations about anything spoken tonight or about your own spiritual practice. Good. That means everybody's doing swimmingly well. No problems. Great.
Tell me if I pronounce it right. How do you say it?
Kaya Kalpa.
Are those the techniques of the Lemurians practice?
Well, there are ancient civilizations that had access to many of these sciences. So, in the past, for instance, in the Old Testament, we're told about beings who lived for 900 years or 1,000 years, or some who were deathless. And so they were obviously practicing some kind of, had some ability for rejuvenating and renewing their bodies. And so either that practice or a practice similar to it. We know that there are health techniques, obviously. Those might be termed kind of the grosser ones. We can not smoke, we cannot drink alcohol, we cannot do some things that will harm the body. So those are kind of the basic do's and don'ts. Get fresh air, get exercise, things like that. Then as we get into deeper and deeper states of meditation, that helps to, as well as to rejuvenate this body as well. And so then there are herbs and there are different things like that that we can use in order to keep this body healthy and to keep it young. But there are deeper sciences than that that take us into a complete and total rejuvenation of this body.
Can you say more about what those are like?
Well, some of them we know about. Kriya Yoga, when it's practiced in its deepest sense, can help us with that. And so how does it do it? It takes us into a complete state of stillness. And when we're in that complete state of stillness, we go into a suspended state of animation. The heartbeat slows down a great deal or it comes to a complete stop totally. The body is then awash with prana. Now, prana is life energy, something that's yet to be discovered by physical scientists. But that life energy comes in and it rejuvenates each one of our cells. And so when you get up from a very good meditation, your skin will glow. You'll feel rejuvenated. You'll feel enlivened. The more you go with that, the more deeply you put yourself into that, the more it has the capacity for rejuvenating you. So you have some capacity right there. And that alone can take you. Now, we know that there are things that work against that. If we worry, if we eat the wrong foods, if we are going against the things that we just know are the basic do's and don'ts around health, then we increase our aging process. So there are some things that are readily at our fingertips that we can do to help prolong life and make it more healthy and make it more sustaining. And then as we go more deeply into deeper states of meditation, certain things can be revealed to us that will even sustain that even more so. It is said of Babaji that he came to a point when he was practicing yoga, he was an old man. And he decided to do this Kaya Kalpa, and when he did so, he went through a special ceremony and a special process. And the result of this, his body began to swell up in the belly region. And it got bigger and bigger and bigger until it just literally split apart. And that old body died, and the new body was perfectly formed as a young adult. And so it came about in that way, and so it didn't have any of the normal kind of physical limitations of going through natural childbirth. And that is the body that he retains today, and it's not subject to decay, it's not subject to aging, it doesn't even need food or drink in order to sustain it. So that came about as a special creation. That's a special kayakalpa. But certainly one of the things we can do is just do the things that we know to do now that will help keep us healthier, and going deep, more and more deeply into states of meditation. It's not always desirable to keep a body longer, longer, longer. What the purpose is to achieve realization. So by keeping a healthy body and by keeping it longer with the purpose of achieving realization, then it's of help to our evolution. Otherwise, it just leads to vanity, to having longer and longer life. But if we're not achieving bliss, if we're not achieving realization, to what end? Why? And when we achieve realization, we don't have any fear of death any longer. Then death just simply seems like a transition. You step out of one room and you step into another room. There's nothing lost. In fact, by shedding this body, it feels like a heavy lead overcoat compared to the life body. And so when it comes time and you've used this body sufficiently and for its purpose, it's a little bit like having your car, you know, and it's just, it's had its life. It's had its time, and you're ready to discard. And by the time you let it go, you're usually pretty ready to let it go. It's become so troublesome, and it misfires, and it doesn't always start. And, you know, it's a little description of the body sometimes as it gets older. But it doesn't have to be that way. We can enter into later ages of the body and maintain its youthfulness to a great degree. An awful lot depends on how we take care of it. So learn to rejuvenate yourself daily. Go more and more deeply into the silence. And through Kriya, by rotating the life force through the spine and the brain, you are bringing that rejuvenation right into your spine and then right into your body. So practice what you have fully and completely. And then feel the effects of that. Feel the tingling vibration of prana throughout your body and your whole being. That will make life worth living. Well, if I could point to it, it would be right in the lower part of the brain in there. And it's a very small, small gland there.
Okay. Now, these two secreting the their secretions come together and then basically creates this crisis.
Yes. Travels down the ganglionic nervous system, and then it comes down and is lodged inside, just behind the stomach.
Okay. Now, then you've got the issue with Herod.
Herod comes up as the passions. And the passions want, and it happens every 28 and a half days that the seed is created.
Interesting.
And so then the passions want to expel, cut off all the heads of the children. Well, when you have that experience, you're going into more and more deepened states of meditation in order to prepare yourself to really receive that seed. And so as you do so, your energies are being drawn up through the spine more and more and more. And so at that time, then you have less of an interest in the sexual relations. You're feeling that powerful force. Most people think of abstinence as denying yourself. But really, when you feel that powerful force coming up through your spine, you're not denying yourself. You feel a tremendous rejuvenization with it. And so with these experiences, you see the light here. And these inner experiences are beginning to unfold. There are signs that begin to indicate that you're ready for this. Now, for most of us, in a married life, normal sexual relationships are fine. That's a good thing to do. There may come a time when you begin to see these signs, when it begins to unfold for you, and it's the time to hold that energy in and allow it to come up and allow it to transform.
Are these 28-day cycles that you're talking about related to the moon?
Yeah.
The full moon?
Yeah.
So when it's full moon, that's when, what specifically?
Well, it's actually in most cases, it's in the dark moon, not in the full moon.
So when there's no moon?
Yeah.
Desires are more rapid?
It depends on the individual. It's just like a woman's monthly cycle period. It's not the same for everybody in the way that it comes. It's tuned to that individual, and yet it's based on a monthly cycle. So it's controlled and governed by the lunar, and it depends on your relationship with the lunar as to when it comes exactly.
But everyone experiences that.
Right.
Certain times of the month,
right,
where there's more desire, more passion or creativity.
Yes, that's right. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
It's the symbolic relationship between the woman's, you know, ovulation period and then also the 28-day cycle.
And men go through a kind of a cycle as well. That's but because the moon is connected with the feminine, then it's more powerful with the feminine than it is with the masculine.
Yeah.
And then the solar is more masculine, and so that has its own cycle as well.
Yeah.
Tell me about the solar cycle that you're thinking of.
Well, only that it's a relationship between the solar and the masculine activity. And so the sun also goes through many variations, and it's going through constant changes, and there's huge solar flares that are being emitted at different times that has a very definite effect on this earth, has an effect on the weather. And so from the early times, the Farmer's Almanac was based on solar flares. And they, I think to this day, of my understanding, they're still better predictors of long-term forecasting than what the U.S. Weather Service is. And so these solar flares and these solar activity are very much part of, it has an influence upon this Earth. And so, as well as the consciousness of people.
I've heard that. I've heard in the past that the sun is really no more than very highly advanced enlightened beings that have come together.
Well, what's true is that within nature, different beings will take up residence. For instance, certain mountains will have certain beings in it, or certain trees, or certain places will. And you can feel that when you go to those certain places. But, you know, that's something that it doesn't mean that it doesn't have a physical representation and that there's not physical science also going on behind it. But if you think about yourself as joining, for instance, with a particular aspect of nature, say in a mountain, and just immersing yourself in that mountain consciousness, just what that would be like. And for some beings, it's a tremendous state of rest. And so they've gone through a lot of activity and they want to take incarnation in a particular form. And so they come in that particular form. And oftentimes they're very, very highly realized beings. But they're residing in that particular part of nature.
And is that because the energy is slower in that than obviously we all have the same energy and everything, but is it slower in that
well,
that particular thing, and that's why it's more comforting or what?
In a sense it is. It's a more slower rhythm. It's not necessarily that's a lower kind of vibration because these higher beings wouldn't be attracted, but it's very soothing to them.
So a tree could have could be in a lightened soul inside the tree.
It can be.
It just needs a rest.
Or it just chooses to have that kind of incarnation. So when you have freedom, and as you ascend up the spinal consciousness, you get more and more freedom. And as you get more and more freedom, you're able to make more and more choices. So what's true within consciousness is that higher consciousness can choose among a much wider variety. It gets the full spectrum. But lower consciousness is relegated to a fairly narrow band. So, for instance, souls who have incarnated on Earth and have a lot of evil propensities to them, when they leave the body consciousness, they have access to only a very narrow, dark band of consciousness. Whereas higher developed beings have access to a wide variety. Because everything from, if you think about it as higher consciousness as being here, they have access to everything up and down the scale that's below them. A lower consciousness is down here. They only have a very narrow choice of consciousness. So dark beings will incarnate into a very dark, it's where the notion of hell comes from. Now, hell is not eternal. It may seem like it when you're in it, but it's not. It's for a time period of working out the karma from that particular lifetime. But they don't have the choice to go into the higher realms. So those beings that have earned being able to go into higher realms, they're not bothered by those who are in lower realms. It's what's shocking to many of us incarnating into this earth that there can be a Gandhi and there can be a Hitler or a Stalin or a Mao, all on the earth at the same time. And it seems, there's the bully in the schoolyard. And we go, what's this? You know, it shocks our system. Because where we've come from, it's not like that. We're not subject to those kinds of things. So it kind of shocks it. What's this all about? You know, and it seems incongruous to us. So there's a certain level of learning how to cope with the variety of souls that come into this world. And how to discern not to become like the lower consciousness, but how to raise ourselves to higher levels. And it's a challenge, isn't it? It's a challenge. But it's a good challenge. Good challenge, and we can learn to do it. We can learn how to attune ourselves inwardly and let the world be the world. We're called upon to do a certain activity. We're called upon to play a certain role in this world, and we must do that. We must do it. And we must do it well, the best of our ability. But there's inwardly, there's a place that's detached inside. It's free from that. And so we have both. We're active and we have this internal stillness. Both are true. Both are true.
If that could be mastered, then those activities will somehow leave?
No. The activities will no longer bind us. we'll no longer feel distressed by them. We'll no longer feel forlorn. We'll no longer feel separated. We'll feel connected even in the activity. So that there was a great soul one time, and he was offered to go into heaven, but he would have to be there with devils. Seems incongruous. Or he could go into hell and he could be with a saint. He says, I'll take hell and the saint. Because he'll make hell into heaven. And those devils will make heaven into hell. So we make choices as to what we want to attune ourselves to. So when you're in this world but you're not of it, you have this inner attunement, and that becomes more powerful than the world. You see, right now, for many of us, the world feels more powerful. It kind of invades us. It stimulates us. It distresses us. It makes us anxious, worried, angry, frustrated, separated. But that's not the world's problem. That's because the light within us is not yet ignited to the point where it becomes stronger than what's coming at us from the world. So if you take the Buddha, for instance, and you put him into your life, would he be going, oh man, what a rotten job I have, and I'm really put upon here, and my kids are acting up, and man, I hate this. You know? Is that how he would be? Why? Why? His consciousness is beyond it. And yet he could act in this world. You assume that he acted in this world. He interacted with this world. Right? And he interacted with people of all different levels of consciousness. There's that wonderful story of the man who came and just read the Buddha the Riot Act. Just up one side and down the other. So angry with him. Buddha didn't say a word. Man went away in a big huff. And for 3 days he was tortured by the words that he said. He realized that he was way out of hand, that he was projecting onto the Buddha, using modern terminology, you know, for that time. And he was miserable. And he finally went back and he bowed at the feet of the Buddha. And he says, I'm so sorry. He says, I wrongly accused you. I was so angry with you. And I had no right to be. And I want to apologize to you. And the Buddha says, don't apologize to me, apologize to yourself. But the man says, I said such awful things to you. And he said, if you had an apple and you tried to hand it to me and it was rotten on the inside and I looked at it and I said, I don't want that apple. He said, who would have it? The man said, well, I would. He said, even so, you just tried to hand me all these insults, all this negative energy, everything. I took a look at it. I said, that doesn't belong to me. Who's been carrying it around for the last 3 days? You have. Apologize to yourself. Look at what you did to yourself. You did nothing to me. Can we live that cleanly in this world, you see? And that's the challenge. Krishna said, it's like the enameled lotus leaf that the water sits on it, but it doesn't penetrate it. It doesn't soil it. It just rolls off the leaf. Can we allow the world not to penetrate into that inner calm, into that inner inmost self? Can we live in this world and be that way? You see, that's the challenge. To be in the world, but not of it. Participate in it. But allow the light to expand out and move out into this world rather than feel the world is pressing in on us and confining us and distorting us and making us into something that we're not. Intuitively, we feel that. And we blame the world, and sometimes we say, well, I just need to go off to a cave and get rid of this world. It's too much. And it's true that as we spiritually develop, am I interrupting?
No.
Oh, you can share it with all of us.
I was just saying, the boat represents places getting in the way of freedom.
Ah, Yes. Right? So we find that things begin to possess us instead of we possess things. So you identify those things and you let them go. You let them go. And that's, it's not easy. It's not easy. And as I was saying, as we develop more, we get more sensitive to this world. And so it does feel like the world's impinging on us more. The thing is not to withdraw from the world. See, that's what Arjuna wants to do in the Gita. He wants to, he says, isn't it better just to go off to a cave and meditate? Krishna said, no. You were born for this. You were born for this. You must fulfill your obligation here. I know a man in India. He didn't like how much, a Westerner, somebody that I knew from before, he didn't like how much he was being charged for child support. Felt it was unfair. He went to India. He's a holy man there now. I said, no, you belong with your son. He needs you. He needs not only your financial support, he needs you. He's a teenager. He needs you there as a father. That's your proper place. You're not going to make spiritual advancement while you're ignoring that. He didn't agree. He's still there. You see. But he's angry. You know, it's being driven by anger. It's not being driven by love. It's not being driven by... His desire for freedom is to be free of the financial obligation, the stress. But that's... You see, that's not the right motivation in there.
And you can't really be free from it.
Right. He can't be. And he'll always, he'll carry it around in the back of his mind. It's always working on him. How can he be at peace with that when he's not at peace with his son, when he's not at peace with himself around this? And how can he be at peace with it when it's off? It's off. He's off. He's off center. So he writes people all the time asking them for money, you know, so he can. He goes from one ashram to another. He'll stay there for no money until they kick him out. And then he'll move on to another and he'll stay there until they won't have any more of him and they kick him out. What kind of life is this? And yet he portrays himself as a holy man there. You know, he's got big Rudraksha beads all around his neck, and he looks the part. He's got a big beard. But it's going nowhere. It's going nowhere.
And this is why the householder, or the teaching is being directed to the householder.
Yeah. Ramakrishna said, better to fight the battle from the fortress. By that he meant by the home. If it's difficult to meditate sitting in your own room that's dry, presumably, moderately comfortable, you know, you think it's easy to go to a cave and, you know, get into deepened meditation there, it's cold, it's wet, you're subject to all the elements, how do you eat, you know, all of these kinds of things, it's not an easy life. So in Babaji's cave, you know, it's wet on the bottom. You'd have to have a fire there for a long time, I think, to dry it out. The stones are cold.
And who knows what creatures are going to crawl out.
Who knows what creatures are going to crawl out, yeah. So it's, that's not a magic solution somehow, that life gets easier that way. We can imagine that it is. So that's, we have to cure ourselves of that, and we have to bring ourselves back into the body to the degree that we can operate in this world, fulfill our karmic duties for which we have been, you know. That's Lari Mahasya. He just wanted to stay up there. He says, man, I found you now. I don't want to go anywhere. I'm here. And Babaji said, no. That's incorrect. You have a feeling of rightness about it. Your life has brought you to a certain place in your life today. And you have obligations based on that. So that's a good place to start. If something's off, you'll feel it. You feel, I'm not right somehow with myself. I'm not right with the world. And if that feeling is there, then investigate it and find out what is it that's off until you get it. It can be that you're not doing the right thing. It can't be that your attitude just stinks. And you need an attitude adjustment. You know, as the saying goes, attitude determines altitude. And so if you have the wrong attitude, but it can't be that it's the wrong fit for you. It's the wrong place for you. Now, if you have rotten kids, you can't just say, well, you know, and they're little kids, you know, I guess I'm in the wrong place. I'm out of here. You know, you have an obligation to them now. And there are certain things that we've taken on obligations for. So we have to fulfill those obligations. But there may be things that are variables in there that we can figure out, this isn't quite right for me. And I need to make an adjustment in here. And you'll get a feeling for it. You'll get a feeling for it. And as you get closer to being right, it'll click in. It'll feel right. Yes. That'll feel good. And one measurement is just imagine you're at the end of your life. It's your last breath. You let go of this body. You rise up above this body. You look back over your life. What stands out to you as to what you like about it? About what you don't like about it? What stands out to you about what the victories were and what the defeats were? And that will help to inform you if you're off base someplace. You know, there is a woman who started into Kundalini experiences and she had some very high experiences. And she and her husband started going all around the country teaching about Kundalini classes. Meanwhile, because of the stress and because she didn't have a teacher and she wasn't exactly on, she became an alcoholic. Well, she's going around trying to teach all of this to all these people. Meanwhile, she's drinking every day a lot. You know, she's off. There should be something inside of her screaming, no, this is not right. It's not right. But she carried on in this way. You see, and you become a hypocrite then. But there's no place inside that you can't say, well, she didn't know it. She does know it. She does know it. And you feel it. And so just look for that feeling of clarity, that feeling of cleanness, that feeling of rightness. That will be your guide. Abide by the highest light that you know at any particular time. And obviously, that doesn't always mean the easiest way. There's a saying, when you're faced with choices, choose the harder one. It'll probably be the right one. Not exactly the news we want to hear, is it? We'd rather have it the easier way. So this is how we have to have that integrity. And if we don't, we'll be rudderless. Will be rudderless. So that integrity has to come first. Honesty, truthfulness.